You're listening to the USEA official podcast, which takes you behind the scenes of eventing, covering all the big events, professional tips and tricks, interviews, special guests, and the latest USEA eventing news. Welcome to the USEA official podcast, episode 278. And it is, as we promised listeners, another team talk episode for you. I think this is the fourth show we've done now, all about following the US eventing team on the road to Tokyo and hopefully beyond. And I'm delighted to be joined once again. I will start by introducing US eventing performance director, Eric Tuvander. Eric, thank you for coming back on the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
And you're back in the States now, aren't you? We spoke to you just before Christmas when you had sort of dashed home to New Zealand, but you're back on US soil.
Yes. Last time we spoke, I was sitting out in the sun on the porch and having my family running around me. But now I've been back in the US for a month and head down and full on work. And it's great.
All things leading to Tokyo, and it is approaching very quickly. And secondly, also joining us is US Managing Director of Eventing, Jenny Autry.
Hello.
Jenny, Eric, right. It is obviously 2021, the start of a new year. It's the first time we've spoken to you both. I know things have been really, really busy over the last sort of 8 weeks or so already. But let's have a bit of a catch up as to where things are, because so much has happened. And as I say, time is absolutely flying by. So first of all, you've had your first team training session of 2021, which was held at the beginning of February. Eric, how did it go? So who was there and what did you get up to?
Well, it actually started off, Jenny and I, a little bit earlier in January when I first came over. We went around and did our writers' individual performance plans and worked out where they were heading and how they prepare best for Kentucky, and then a little bit of thoughts towards Tokyo. And we have some of our writers in our training list that are heading for Tokyo, and some are possibly more likely for later on for the World Games following year. So we have this training list with a pre-elite and an elite group, and those were the riders who were invited to our training camp. And the training camp was 4 days of training, 2 days with the horses for each group. It's divided up into two groups. And then we had two team meetings in the evenings. And so it was all about getting everyone together. And also for the first time, really putting all the riders on a training field together and working side by side, which is, I find, going to be a very good system for us moving forward.
You find, because obviously everybody often sees each other out competing, but getting the chance to train alongside each other, Eric, do they get that, obviously, a little edge? They sort of look at each other, see how everybody's going well, bounce ideas around as well?
Well, I hope so. That's sort of like the outcome we want to have, especially when it comes to championships, and then when all the riders know each other better and they know each other's horses better. It's been difficult to do that here in the US because it's so spread out. But the other element I believe strongly in as well, when you put them next to each other in a training session, they're very competitive, and I think it drives performance as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is healthy competition. Those team places are going to be hard fought. Three in a team means that there is going to be everybody out for sort of improving their performance as much as they can. Jenny, I know obviously having everybody in one place also gives you massive benefits in terms of the whole team, the wider team, not just the trainers, being able to kind of get involved and take stock of everybody at the start of the season as well.
Absolutely. It's super valuable to be able to get a baseline on the horses early in the year when obviously we have a big year ahead of us. So we also had our team vet, Dr. Susan Johns, there, along with our team equine physio, Joanne Wilson, and a farrier who we are trialing this year after our main team farrier for many years, Steve Teachman, retired. So they were all able to work together as a group to be able to evaluate the horses and make sure all things are humming along ahead to Tokyo. So it was just a really, really nice week to be able to get everyone together, get everybody on the same page, And we were very lucky to be able to host the training sessions at a private farm owned by Rob and Chris DeCino, who are owners for Liz Halliday Sharp, and they very generously hosted us there. So it was a super nice start to the year after we've had obviously a very tumultuous 2020, and we are looking ahead to Tokyo and what that might bring for us.
Well, fingers crossed, it will be slightly less eventful over the next couple of months. In terms of the number of people involved, just give us an indication as to kind of the scale of what that sort of training will involve.
Well, of course, we ran the training sessions under the USEF COVID-19 action plan. And the aim there is to keep as few people really on the grounds as possible. So it was limited to our 11 riders on the Elite Pre-Elite squad, their grooms, and of course, our horse health team and our vet, physio, farrier. And then we had Eric there and Peter Wild. And a very small handful of owners came in to watch their horses jump, but everyone wore masks, we social distanced, we hand sanitized, and we were able to run a safe camp, which obviously we're thrilled about.
Yeah, the attention to detail by everybody going into making sure that it's a safe environment and making sure that the plans can still go ahead is absolutely extraordinary. Jenny, you just mentioned Peter Wild. Eric, I wanted to ask you about him because he's been brought on. I think this is his first year in terms of joining the team to help specifically with the show jumping. How exciting is it to have Peter involved, and what are you hoping that he'll sort of bring to the table apart from obviously all of his expertise and years of experience and at the highest level?
Well, Peter, I've always been a huge fan of Peter's way of riding, his style of riding. He rides with a lot of feel and it's purely beautiful riding, and he likes horses, and you just see the way he, as a rider, how he works with his horses. And And I think his style really works well for the crossover from show jumping to cross-country riding as well, because I think the bigger picture is having trainers on board that are all working with the same mindset of what it should look like and how to prepare horses. So having that and knowing that, so when I approached Peter, he was very fortunate because he sort of like just came off. He didn't want to jump the big classes anymore, and had a bit of spare time. So we trialed him a bit last year, let the riders ride in front of him, and it looked very good, and it was very positively received by the riders. So that's really how the process was. We didn't just throw him in there. So he was sort of semi-prepared. I think it is difficult to find world-class trainers, even in the US, even there's plenty of them, but they're all pretty busy and so on. And having the luck of having Peter just coming off his top end jumping, and then he's actually very keen and enjoys the eventing side of it as well, even if he doesn't know that much about it. I think it's going to add a lot to our riders, and it's going to give all the riders a continuously sort of training. We have several training sessions here in the lead up to until Kentucky, and then onwards from there. So they'll see him a lot, and I think he can do. He can make a difference.
And will he work with riders just in terms of those team training environments, or will he have the opportunity to work with them individually as well? How does that work?
Well, it is open for anyone who wants to work privately with him. So that's no restriction on that for sure. But we're having quite the training sessions are coming up nearly every second week here for all the riders all the way until Kentucky. So I think they're getting enough of him through what we provide. And we obviously have to have it in different locations. So now we have him down in Ocala and then in Aiken, and then we'll move up towards in North Carolina and Virginia and PA later on, closer to Kentucky.
Yeah, that all makes sense. Now, Kentucky. So obviously a lot, as I say, has happened over the last few weeks. We sort of started off with the announcement that Kentucky wouldn't be running, at which point I imagine, Jenny, there was a bit of a discussion once again as to working out, I guess, a secondary plan in terms of your team perspective, because obviously Kentucky is a really important selection trial for you. Talk us through that, because it must be, I know you're all very good at changing plans now, but it's not an easy thing to do all of the time.
Yeah, I think I was on the phone every hour for every waking hour for about a week when that happened. What I'll say is that the outpouring from the eventing community and the athletes and the owners was just extraordinary to be able to get the event back on track. And of course, it wouldn't have been possible without the sponsors for the event as well. Land Rover, who is our team sponsor, is the title sponsor of the Kentucky 3-Day, and Mars Equestrian and Rolex also really stepped up in a big way. So it was truly a community effort to save an event that is so beloved and obviously is very deeply rooted here in U.S. eventing history and is one that is extremely important to us from a big picture, but also, of course, from a Tokyo picture. So essentially, 1 week later after the announcement, we were back on track, which was obviously a huge relief for us because our plan all along had been for our top combinations to go to Kentucky to run the five-star with selection in mind. So yes, a bit of a whirlwind, but back on track now. And obviously we're very grateful to the team at EEI who run the event, who have worked incredibly hard also to get it back on track. So definitely a team effort all the way around.
Yeah, it's amazing what the eventing community can do when they all pull together. But the relief, I guess, is a bit of a word there. There have been so many changes over the last 12 months. And actually to have that back on course actually is something going in the right direction. And luck is turning and on side for a nice change. What about the build up to Kentucky? Eric, you mentioned that obviously you've got plenty of training coming up every couple of weeks. In terms of riders and their sort of preparations, are there specific events that you've said we would like to see you run at, or are riders very much able to sort of take their own path as you were sort of spoke to them about earlier in the year when you looked at those plans?
Well, I'm a great believer that the riders in the end of the day know best how to prepare their horses for Kentucky. So all the focus has been on Kentucky. We are very fortunate here in the U.S. First of all, very fortunate that we have all our events running so far as we understand it. And the quality of events we have in the lead up, we have a lot of them. And they're all designed by some of the best course designers in the world. So there is a lot of choice for the riders. So there's very few riders who are going down the same path. They're picking and choosing out of locality or a little bit on what style, of course, would be most beneficial for their horses. So, it's not difficult to find a way to get ready for Kentucky the way our eventing season looks here, with so much choice to go for.
Yeah, and actually, really starting to get into the thick of that now with Red Hills, Carolina, both coming up in the next few weeks as well. So, we're looking forward to seeing some of those horses back out competing, and having seen a few of the pictures and everything from training and hearing on the grapevine, there are a number looking in exceptional form. What about the sort of official selection trials as such, Jenny? Just remind us of those, because obviously Kentucky is one, but there's a couple of others that will be taken into account as well, aren't there?
Right. So we do have both Badminton and Jersey Fresh as selection trials, but both of those run on the same weekend. So most of our riders, or really all of our riders, would be going to Jersey Fresh if they have to. But plan A is Kentucky for those combinations that are really in contention. And we do have a couple who might be taking younger horses to Jersey Fresh as well. So really all eyes will be on Kentucky, which will be live streamed. I know we've gotten a lot of questions about that, but it will still be live streamed on USCF Network. So everyone will be able to watch.
Exciting. Badminton, Eric, obviously logistics are changing and are tricky, even trickier than it is normally to fly horses halfway across the world. But are you still anticipating sending US combinations over to Badminton?
So out of our training list, our pre-elite and elite list, there's no one going to Badminton. So it's not something we're focusing on. We see higher value in having all the riders competing up against each other at one place. So I've been encouraging that. If someone wanted to go to Badminton, I probably wouldn't stand in the way, because Badminton is obviously another one of the most fantastic events in the world, and the competition is very tough there. But the value of having them up next to each other is, I think, that once again, it drives performance. And it really showed last year when they all finished up in a try on running the four long there, and it became a very, very good competition. And it also gave new combinations a chance to really show where they stand against the other riders. So I think the path of going or heading all the listed riders or to Kentucky as the right one. However, I love badminton. I don't know if I'll be going there because we have listed horses going to Jersey Fresh as well. So I'll probably have to stay in America for that. Yeah, hopefully next year we'll be able to go to badminton with a bunch.
Yeah, it all makes complete sense. And to be honest, as you say, putting them up against each other and really sort of firing on all cylinders will make for a really hot competition and drive that performance level as well. In terms of sort of heading into Tokyo and the logistics of it, obviously it is all systems go. Jenny, how are things looking in terms of the logistics from your side? Because it is a massive operation in organizing everything, let alone in these sort of uncertain times. So how is everything from your perspective? Can you give us an update on any guidance that's been given by the IOC? I understand there's the playbook that's recently been released that kind of gives a bit more detail in terms of how it will look with this current situation as well.
Right. So the IOC has released the official playbook, which gives the guidelines for athletes, officials, essentially anyone who will be there at the games. So that was really our first look as far as what the protocols might be on the ground. And I know there's been a lot of questions around vaccinations and whether they will be required for athletes. And the answer is no, that vaccination will not be required. And there are a lot of reasons for that, but the IOC has really strongly supported that vulnerable groups and nurses and doctors and people on the front lines should be the ones to receive priority for vaccination, and the athletes should not try to jump the line or anything like that. And of course, the USOPC is our National Olympic Committee, and they've been very supportive of the IOC's stance on vaccination as well. So it will be a question of how many people will actually be vaccinated when we go. And because of that, all of the normal COVID protocols we're all used to now, as far as masks and social distancing and testing, will all be in full force. So we're waiting on final confirmation on the testing protocol. But what we've been told currently is it will be testing every 4 days. And essentially, we will be in a bubble. And it will be very limited as far as where we can go outside of the venue and accommodation. And I think one of the themes that's really been pushed on us is managing expectations for athletes and anyone else, like owners who might be going to the games, that this will be a very different Olympics than it typically would be. But Eric and I like to think that eventers are a hearty bunch, and we don't necessarily have high expectations when it comes to things like accommodation and all that. So we feel confident that whatever it ultimately ends up looking like when we go, that we'll be able to be very focused on the task at hand and deliver a strong performance.
Yeah, and I suppose from that perspective as well, it's going to be a different Games. There's no getting away from the fact that it's got to be different. But if everybody can pull together and make sure that it is able to, one, go ahead, and two, successfully, then that is ultimately the main aim. And you know, the sacrifice that you have to make in terms of things not being totally normal are well worth it. Looking forward over past Kentucky, obviously in the build up to Tokyo, what is sort of the time scale? And I know we'll talk about this nearer the time as well, but what is the time scale in terms of you know, final training dates, and when can I set an alarm in my phone, Eric, to kind of think, oh, there might be some team news coming?
Well, so basically what happens is after Jersey Fresh, we want to give the horses about 8 to 10 days before we do the veterinary evaluations. So it'll be all the horses from Kentucky and then and the horses from Jersey Fresh. And the selector put forward a bunch of horses that they would like to have looked at. And then after that, you will get into selection. So it's going to be towards the end of May where the selection is. Jenny might have an exact date on that, but that's right. Just what's in my mind.
Yeah, no later than June 1, we would announce the team.
Okay, and is that so will you announce a team of four traveling combinations, or a team and a reserve? How is that going to work?
No, I think we'll be quite clear of like naming the 1, 2, 3, and 4 and then the ones after that. And exactly how we're going to run that will probably be a conversation with the selectors as well, because it is also about the team dynamics. So if one falls out, what type of horse would you like to have in instead? So I think the whole lineup will have to be a little more clear when we've spoken to the selectors as well, because they will add good thought into how that would look.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. How many selectors are there, just out of interest?
Five.
Okay, perfect. Right. So the road to Tokyo, the road to Kentucky is very much on. Eric, Jenny, thank you so much for coming on the show to talk to us. And we're looking forward to another update. I imagine it'll be around Kentucky time.
Fantastic. Thank you.
But exciting times. And listeners, all eyes heading towards Kentucky, because that is where you are going to see the biggest and the best US combinations going head to head in a bid to battle it out for Tokyo places. Jenny, Eric, big thank you to you both. Good luck over the next few months. I hope that the pathway is a little more straightforward for you than it was 12 months ago, and that it has been at times. I have absolutely no doubt you will deal with whatever is thrown your way, though. So a big thank you, and we'll look forward to catching up with you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nicole.
Listeners, thank you very much for listening. And don't forget, you can follow the US team via these Team Talk series. We've spoken to Jenny and Eric a few times before. You can go back and find them on the website, useventing.com. And we will be back very soon with more on the USCA official podcast very soon. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to the USCA official podcast. If you have any suggestions or feedback, then we would love to hear from you. Get in touch through any of our social media platforms at US Eventing, and don't forget to subscribe on your preferred podcast platform to make sure you don't miss an episode.